Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the NYBS Radio Show, home of the New York Bigfoot Society.
Nation. This is Gary Hootenhala here. Welcome to another episode of Bigfoot Radio, right here from the great state of New York. It's great to be back. I know we took a little bit of a hiatus last week. We had some technical difficulties, which really sucked, but we got that straightened out. And also, spent super busy out in the field. It's that time of year. We're getting out more. We're exploring. The claims that we get coming in from all the witnesses and our spotters. We're going out and checking them out now. We have a lot more free time. So that's the bonus, is free time. Life gets so crazy. As you know, we do this as, you know, even if it's a hobby, it's really like not a hobby to us. It's all about time. So we've been getting back out into the woods, and our guest tonight, Robert, it's going to be really cool because, he had an experience just recently, and that's what's awesome. This is a very recent experience that's happening out of the Adirondacks. And this is more of the Central Adirondack area. We'll get to that in a little bit later with him. But let's go over some clerical, like I say, because we've been away for a hot minute, and we're getting back into. We're on episode number 8 of the show, which is awesome. So thank you everybody for listening. Without your support, we wouldn't be able to really do what we do. So we thank you all for tuning in and, looking on the Facebook page. We have Twitter now and, keeping track of what we're doing. I mean, we're trying our best to get the best information out to you. We only use cream of the crop information. So just know that, we do not show the stuff that we actually get because it's not cream of the crop. We want the best of the best. So many people put out all sorts of pictures and, recordings and stuff, but there's not a lot of substance to it. We put the substance to what we are doing, what we're experiencing, and what we're finding. That's the only way that, people will take this seriously for what we do, looking for Bigfoot, which most people think is a mythical creature. But a lot of us know differently. All right, so let's do some clerical here. So on July 22nd, we're going to be at the Gloversville Library doing a lecture, showing evidence once again, showing a bunch of sounds. We are now starting to collect brand new stuff from out of the field, so we'll have brand new stuff to show everybody, which is always awesome. Always means that we're kind of on the right path of what we're doing and our thinking. The main thing, it's our thinking. Everything's based on a theory. We bounce around so many different theories within the team. I know I'm constantly going back and forth on theories myself, to then employ equipment and things like that to what we need to do to get this find our best results. So we have brainers on the show, which is always great. So on July 22nd, that will be at 6 p.m. So it's nice and early. It's only an hour, so from 6 to 7. And then afterwards, if anybody wants to talk Bigfoot with me afterwards, I'm always here to talk because I love to talk. All right. So a couple of weeks ago, we did what was called an event. It was the Free Spirit Expo, which was down in Westchester County. We tabled there. It was a super cool day. Met so many people, and the really cool thing was the first guy that came up to the table was me and my team psychic on my ghost side. We were basically down there doing some tabling things. I was actually a guest speaker. but I was supposed to talk a lot about paranormal stuff, and I kept hitting Bigfoot stuff over and over. But our first person that came to the table was a Bigfoot guy, which was pretty cool. And, you know, we just sat and talked about Bigfoot and his experience with a Bigfoot. So, I mean, it was just so cool to talk about that. But that happened about, you know, that was happened a couple of years ago for him. And it's really cool to hear these stories, and that's why we do this radio show. You know, it's for to hear the witnesses and the people come out and tell their encounter and their story. That is the cream of the crop of what we do, you know. So that's why we do the show. So it was cool to hear that. It went really well. It was just a really good day. Overall, you know, we've been hitting the woods more and more. You know, we were out last week, had a great outing. I'm in the process of training some new investigators on the team, which is always, you know, a good time teaching them about the woods, you know, as I'm a woodsy person. And, you know, just getting out into these areas and just getting some work done. You know, this week we're going to be going out again. Next week we're going out again. So for the next couple of weeks, we are booked solid. We will be out into the woods in all different areas and locations. So to recap kind of what we did last week, if you haven't read the Facebook page and the field updates, I try to keep you updated as best as I can on field reports, on pictures, on anything that we're doing, on short videos. It's hard because we don't always get service. So you know, you have to bear with us sometimes because we're not getting service. So a lot of this stuff comes later when we then get service. But if we do get service, I try to update as much as I can. So coming out of the Adirondacks in one of our research areas was really cool. Basically, what we our goal of the on that night was to set up a you know a trail camera deep down in the woods, way down in the backcountry. So you know I two investigators with me. We had one staying back at base camp, you know, getting, you know, things situated there. And, you know, we deployed a camera. We successfully deployed a camera. And the reason I say successfully is we found a really good area that has a good vantage point that, you know, basically we were able to, you know, dig down into the trees, hide it really well, and get a very good vantage point of the area that we are searching in that small spot. The cameras that we use are panoramic cameras. They're, you know, expensive, but they, you get a panoramic picture. You know, a lot of people are like, well, Gary, you know, you use trail cameras, but we never see really Bigfoot pictures on trail cameras, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the reason that we use trail cameras is not to catch a Bigfoot. You know, I want to personally see, you know, what is the environment in this area? Like what animals are coming through? What time are the animals coming? What types of animals are coming through? What time are the deer coming through? What's the population? Could this area hold, you know, be enough food for a Sasquatch to be in? Are these animals coming through at certain times? When aren't they there? Are these times that they're not there? Well, that could be kind of strange. So, you know, one of the areas that we put the camera in is a very high activity area. My theory is the reason that we don't catch so many, you know, we don't get a lot of trail cam pictures of Sasquatch. A lot of people will argue about, you know, the infrared glow on a camera and they can hear the flash and they can see the flash and blah, blah, blah. I look at it from a very simple point of this. Human contamination of an area, all right? People go in the woods wearing camo and don't want to be seen and think they could sneak up on a Bigfoot. It's just not going to happen. My team. I'm against camo. I tell them, do not wear camo. We're never going to sneak up on a Squatch. It's just not going to happen. So when we're in these areas and we're walking all over the place, we're touching trees, or we're rubbing our scent all over the place. Basically, even we're just letting that Squatch know or any animal know that humans were there. That, to me, would be one of the reasons why we don't get a lot of, you know, Bigfoot pictures on trail cams. There are some out there. You know, I was very lucky to investigate, actually, be on an investigation of a guy who caught, you know, a Sasquatch on a trail camera, which will, that'll be another episode. But, you know, and it was pretty legit to me, you know what I mean? But in the same sense, you know, when we're out in the woods, we're putting these cameras in there, no humans are in these areas. Guess what? We're contaminating that whole entire area. So that's my personal theory. They already know that humans were disturbing the area. They could smell us because we're touching everything and things like that. And they could smell us coming through. So if there is a Squatch in the area, of course, they would be able to hear us coming through the woods, smell us coming through the woods. We're going to know where we're working. It's pretty, and I'd say I look at it as simple logic. Deer know when we're in the woods. there's no one more in the woods. They know where we've been. So that's my logic on trail cameras and why we don't get too many Bigfoot pictures from them. And a lot of the ones that we do get, they're so questionable. I mean, that's the problem. Unless you have a flat-out picture of a Bigfoot standing there, there's no point of even using that picture because it's just going to get ripped apart. And even if you do catch a Bigfoot on a trail cam and it looks amazing, guess what? It's still going to get ripped apart because people are going to be like, well, it's a ghillie suit. It's a hoax. It's this. That we're up against so much doing this stuff. We're up against so much because people have ruined it for us and as real researchers. So it's like you really gotta put your stories together, put your pieces together, and make sure that the story is straight, all right, and doesn't change. So we deployed that anyway. We got a lot of tree knocks in response to what we were doing. One thing that I have been taking note of in one of the experiments that we have been doing is that we've been starting to take rocks and throw them at trees. In our past shows, you've heard that we think that doing rock knocking and not tree knocking. What they're doing is taking rocks and making that sound. So we've experimented with this a lot. And when you get a nice size rock and you throw it against a tree, guess what? It sounds exactly like a tree knock. It really does. And it doesn't really matter what tree you're picking. A lot of the trees do sound the same. So we started doing that more and more, and guess what? We got direct knock responses to that. We were basically we had a team of people that were down in the woods, they were practicing it, and sure enough, on one of the throws against the tree, we got a direct knock right back. Two out of the three people heard the direct knock right back. Also, at the same time, we had something walking to our left through the woods. You could hear it moving around. We don't know what it is. But the knocks were heard by multiple investigators on the team. I sent two investigators up under the trail to kind of do this basically some field research by themselves. I stayed at camp with my camp guy, and sure enough, we were basically doing rock knocks and tree knocks. Once again, when we took a stick and started hitting the tree, no responses whatsoever. Okay, we threw rocks against the tree. Boom! Once again, a rock knock back. So what we're starting to find is we're actually getting more responses to throwing rocks against trees than against sticks. Think about it from a logical standpoint. If you're in, you know, areas where there's a lot of people, if you're in areas like where people hike or camp or do those kind of things, it would make sense that they would answer to rocks and not sticks, because when people are chopping their wood for fires with hatchets and things like that, what does it sound like? It sounds like almost like a stick knock against a tree when you're sitting there trying to chop that wood. So they can tell the difference of that. When you hit a rock against a tree, it sounds totally different than when you're taking a hatchet and slamming it into a piece of wood, which my base camp guy broke my hatchet. Yeah, he broke my hatchet. But anyway, so we were getting the definitely getting the rock knocks back. So that was really cool. So we took that away from that night's investigation. You know, a couple people heard it. Some people don't hear it. It's just about timing and what you're really trying to listen for in the woods. As you know, when you're in the woods, you become in tune with the woods a little bit more. The more you go out in the woods, the more in tune you'll become. You'll understand what to listen for. So it was a good time. We had a great time. A lot of fun. It was nice to get back out in the woods. It was super creepy. And we just, you know, we did what we had to do, and we're good on that. Now that camera will sit in the woods for a couple weeks. So we're excited for that. So with that being said, that's what we've been up to, and we're now going to bring in our guest. His name is Robert, and let's bring him in. What's going on, Robert?
Not much. How's it going?
Awesome. Nah, awesome. It's a great day as usual, other than it's hot as hell outside today. But this is New York. Humidity in the summer. All right. So, I guess it's better than snow for a lot of people, right? Because the Adirondacks, I mean, they're finally getting rid of all the snow up at Mount Marcy. They still had snow on the summit up there 2 weeks ago. So,
wow.
And I know it snowed up. Yeah, and I guess in the beginning of the month, it snowed up in Whiteface, too. So they got some snow up there. But I guess we'll take the heat. Why not? So tell us what you do tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm my mid-30s. I'm a local law enforcement. I'd rather not disclose exactly where. However, came across some stuff this past Memorial Day weekend with my brother-in-law. We went up for a weekend trip to the Adirondacks, and we ended up leaving there with more questions than we had understanding, and happened to stumble across your Facebook page and figure I'd give you a shout out and see what you thought.
Yeah, I mean, you came across some very interesting things, most definitely. So, yeah, let's talk about what you came across.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll give you a little bit of a background as to how the weekend started out. My brother-in-law and I, his name's Ken, we take a yearly trip up the Adirondacks on our motorcycles. We have on-road, off-road bikes, and we tend to load them up with all of our camping stuff and survival gear, and we try to get as far back as we can away from any type of civilization and just go out searching during the day or night just for wildlife or anything we can get. We keep cameras on our bikes, and the day prior, this is Memorial Day weekend, so that Saturday, we were up in the Speculator area, and we were just north of Speculator in the Jessup tree farm area. We rode back there until we're about 12 miles off of the main road, just on snowmobile trails and logging roads, and we ended up getting to like West Canada Lakes, and from there it's all foot trail, so we had to park the bike, and we hopped off, and we very quickly realized that as soon as we took our helmets off, we were covered in mosquitoes. It was just that time of year where you couldn't go anywhere, and they were just eating us alive. So we figured we went about as far as we could for the day. So we pulled out a cigar, and we kind of did our little victory dance, and we made it in X amount of miles, and we made our way out. This ended up, it was like a 6-hour round trip, and then we went back to the Speculator grocery store, and we were parked out there and eating a makeshift sandwich, and some of these local guys, older guys, came up. One of them had a Korean War veteran's hat on, the other one had a Vietnam veteran's hat on. They were full duck gear, waist waders, and they got out, and they started talking to us about our bikes and said, you know, those are the things you guys need to get back to where we are. So obviously our ears perked up a little bit, and we're like, okay, well, where were you? And they told us of a location just north of where we were, but we'd have to enter it by going up to Indian Lake. So we got about the coordinates of where that was, and it was one of those, you go here, and then when you pass this bridge, you turn a left here, and then you're going to see this, and then go there. So my brother and I, being more technological, we tried finding it on our maps. We eventually did find it, and we figured that for the next day, that's going to be where we head out. So we ended up taking a ride up to Lake Placid for the night, and we drove around throughout the night with our spotlights on and things like that. Went up and visited Heart Lake up there at the Adirondack Lodge. And then we decided that we'd call it a night, and the next morning we'd head out for this area. So to get back to where we needed, from Indian Lake, we had to turn off of, I believe it was Highway 28. We had to turn off near the Cedar River golf course. And not being very familiar with this area, it was about a 12-mile drive. The first 4 or 5 miles was like a paved road without any markings on it. And then it slowly transitioned to like an improved gravel. And then within like the last 3 miles or so before we got to Cedar River Flow, it was just unimproved gravel and there were boulders sticking out of the ground that would hit a low clearance vehicle if you weren't paying attention. Once we got back to Cedar River Flow, there's this little sign-in station, and there was a camper there, but there were no cars. It didn't look like there was any activity for the day. Within the past week or so, somebody had been there, but it just didn't show any signs that anybody was there. So we signed in at the trailhead, and we decided to keep riding back to the campsites. And if we had it mapped correctly, we would have been able to connect over towards the south end of Racket Lake by doing nothing but these logging trails. So my brother and I, not thinking much of it, we rode pretty much the speed limit going through there, which is right around 25 miles an hour, not paying too much attention to what's going on. And it was about 7.5-8 miles in from there. We came to a point where they had the road chained up. And this traditionally is like snowmobile trails in the wintertime for recreation. And we rode up to the chain thinking if there's a way that we can kind of bypass it and go around. Because you could see people have been mountain biking past it and other vehicles have been going by. And we decided that the amount of effort that was put into chaining this trail up, we decided we weren't going to go past it. So we turned around, and within probably 100 yards from there, there was a campsite. So we backtracked to the campsite, and we kind of went down. The campsite was right up against the Cedar River, or I think it's the Little Moose River. I'd have to look at a map and see what they designated as. But we pulled down there and we turned off the bikes and we hopped off and quickly lit up a cigar to try and keep these mosquitoes away. Now my brother, he, you know, being adventurous, went hopping off through the woods. The next thing I know, I look up and he's standing out on a boulder about 25 yards from me out in the river. So I made my way over there to him. And by the time I got out onto that boulder, we're just kind of standing there, just kind of joking around a little bit, trying to figure out why they would have had that trail closed up. And we really couldn't get any definite answer other than this was like the first weekend that they opened up the Cedar River campsites. And so we probably were the first ones to go back there in quite a while with any type of a vehicle other than a snowmobile.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We were beside ourselves that we were able to get back as far as we did. We were kind of bummed out we couldn't go any further. And we're just kind of hanging out, not really paying too much attention. Just we're standing out there in the river and you hear the river flow going by. I mean, it's not very deep, maybe waist height. And it's not a fast moving river where we were. And how we didn't see it right away is beyond me. We must have been standing there for 2 or 3 minutes just kind of talking about this and said, "Hey, look at that. Across the river from us." I don't know the exact distance. I'd say within 20 yards from us, there was like a teepee. I don't know how else to describe it. It just looked like a teepee. And we're first thing we said was, "Wow, that's weird. I wonder who would have crossed the river just to build one of those things." I mean, it wasn't in an accessible area where any normal person probably would have just said, "I'm going to go walk across the deep part of the river and go build this thing." There weren't any trails on the other side. And the first thing that really kind of made me think about it was the fact that all the tree branches were stripped of their bark and they were all broken. And I said to him, I was like, "Hey, it doesn't look like any one of those were sawed," because I would think if I were out there, I'd probably either take out the hatchet or some sort of a camp saw and saw some things up. And then he started looking. He's like, "Yeah, I don't really see that either." And it just kind of gave me one of those hair up on the back of my neck type feelings, like, what is it that I'm looking at right here?
Yeah.
So we're sitting here looking at this kind of talk, and he goes, "I wonder where that's coming from." And so I listened up, and upstream from the river, I can't really give you a distance of how far away. It's definitely close enough for us to be able to hear. There was some sort of talking going on. We just expected, you know, if we just quiet it down a little bit and wait, some hikers or something were going to just come walking through, bushwhacking through the woods. I mean, it was pretty thick stuff over there. So we were just waiting, anticipating for some hikers to come out, and it didn't happen. And the chatter kind of disappeared. Like, we could hear it, all I could say is it sounded like people were talking, but since we didn't have direct line of sight with them, that maybe we couldn't understand what it was they were saying. And it went away, and about 30 seconds later, it came back again, but it was closer, and it was a lot more pronounced, a lot louder. So really, at this point, we're looking like right over top of where this teepee is around that area, and we're waiting for somebody just to come walking out of the woods. And we're like, "Hey, how's it going? Hello?" And nobody said anything. There was nothing. It got quiet.
Wow.
Thought that was kind of odd. You know, another minute or so goes by, and we weren't paying too much attention to it. We just kind of brushed it off like, "Oh, that's weird. I guess maybe the trail must have turned around a bend or something and maybe they're gone." just a few moments later, maybe a minute or two, 3 minutes, I don't know. The time, it's kind of odd. I wasn't really paying attention to the time. It was just we were out there smoking a cigar talking. And we heard it again, but now it was further away, and it sounded like it was back upstream and further in. At this distance, it would have been, for a normal person out, say, on like a football field, it probably would have been like the distance from one sideline to the other away. That's just the sound at a normal conversation that we were hearing. So we didn't think too much of it, just thought, well, maybe whoever it was didn't want to be bothered by us. And so we're on the rock for maybe 20 minutes total. And then we hop down and we go back over to the part where our bikes are parked over by where the bonfire pit would be. And there's some cinder blocks there, and you can see some human trash on the ground, things like that. And we're just kind of standing there trying to figure out what we wanted to do next, what our next course of action was. We looked across the river from us, and my brother, Ken, he's the one that figured this out. He goes, "Hey, what's that?" He just kind of points to it, and I'm looking at it, and my eyesight's not very good. I have to wear glasses to see. And so I'm looking at this thing, and I said, "It looks like a tree stump." And he mentioned the fact that, well, it's got something hanging on it. And the color of it, to me, it looked like a towel, like a bath towel that was gray or brown. Whatever the color of this tree stump was like the same color of this towel. And so we couldn't figure out if it was a T-shirt or if it was a towel hanging over the stump, but it was pretty weird. It was just odd. It's one of those things that you look at, you're like, why would somebody put a towel over a tree stump? And the tree stump itself was way higher than I could reach. I'm 5'7", 5'6". My brother-in-law, he's over the 6 foot range, and we didn't physically walk across the river, but just judging based upon the trees and the shrubbery around it, he would probably have to jump to be able to toss the thing up over top of this tree stump. And the strange thing about this tree stump is all the bark was stripped off of it. So either it had been dead, it was a tree that's been dead for quite a while, and all the bark just kind of naturally fell off of it, but we couldn't find any bit of the tree around it. So I'm assuming that somebody had camped there at one point and crossed over the river and took all the dead wood and used it for fires. So at this point, we're just kind of thinking about heading out, and in pulls the New York State Park Police. This guy, he came down in his green truck and pulled right up to where we were, pretty much as far as he could drive before stopping. He opens up his door and he just steps outside of the door. Never really takes his hand off of the door. The window was open, never took his hand off the door, and he's just kind of asking us some questions. Like the first question he asked was, somebody gave me reports that two guys on bikes were back here, and so I just came by to check it out. And my brother and I were just kind of like looking at him like, huh, we are really far back. Like, you came all the way out here just to check on us. That was like in the back of our minds. And he goes, yep, there's a gate right up here, and I just wanted to make sure that you didn't cross over that gate. He goes, we've been having a problem with enduros coming through here and blowing past the gate. And so that kind of explained to me why there's this nice big heavy chain going across. Normally you see like those wooden pylons that kind of block the trails, and you can just slide them off to the side and pass through. This was chained from one major tree stump to the other going across. And I told him, no, we're not going back there. And we went up to it and came back down here. And he just was really antsy at that point. He goes, okay, well, you guys can't be back here. And my brother was in agreement with him. He's like, okay, yep, we're just packing up, just heading out. We just came back here. And he kept trying to hop into the truck and end the conversation. I kept just asking him questions. Between my brother and I, we just kept asking him questions. And now where we were standing, I'm pretty short as it is, and where he was, this officer was definitely taller than me, more towards the 6 foot range. He had to look down to me, and I'm directly in his line sight, and behind me was this teepee structure. And so he kept looking over top of me, over my shoulder, and I can only assume he kept looking back at that thing because that was the only thing back there. I never asked him. I never asked, hey, why can't we be back here? Because we pretty much just assumed it was because we were on bikes and the road was gated up, and first weekend we're out here. So it was just this really uneasy feeling. He couldn't wait to get out of there. He just kept staring back at that structure. And so we said, all right, we didn't have any more questions. He hopped back in, and he reversed out of there pretty quick and was gone. He was gone. I figured with us being on our bikes, we were going to catch up to him, you know, being at least 9 miles to get back to Cedar River Flow on this gravelly, rutted up logging trail. We really were expecting that we were going to bump into him again or ride right up to his bumper. But we never did on the way out. I mean, we only stayed there for another minute or two after that. We put on our gear and we headed out. And driving back, I was in the lead, and my brother Ken, he was behind me. We made it maybe a minute or two driving like 20, 25 miles an hour. And then all of a sudden he started honking his horn. So I stop and I turn around and he turns around and we circle back and we pull up the side and we, stop and he goes, hey, look at that. And he points out to the right-hand side over top of the river, there were trees and it's not like your normal tree that just would fall down in the forest and it just happens to land across the river. There were multiple trees, 5 to 6 large, full-size trees just pushed down over top of the river. And the odd part about it, the thing that really kind of irked me and kind of gave both of us the chill factor is the trees weren't just falling. They weren't connected to the ground. They weren't connected to anything else. They looked like they had been lowered, and they were wedged between some other trees going across this river. And they were stacked like Lincoln logs, one on top of the other, on top of the other. And we took like 3 or 4 different photos of this from different angles. And every angle going across, it was odd because one of the trees, the root ball was up. And now I've never seen a tree with the root ball up in the air. It's not something that I've ever really witnessed before. I'm not going to say I'm the most avid outdoorsman, but I've always been outside between hunting and hiking and mountain biking and outdoor activities. I've always just sort of grown up out in the woods. I've never really been in a city or type deal where I've lived out there. So being outside, it was definitely unnatural. It wasn't something I've ever really noticed before. And so we both said, okay, that's good. We're going to get out of here now. We kept driving and we would pass. At this point now, we're looking off the side of the road more than we are looking down the road. And we're passing tree structure after tree structure. And when I say that, I mean trees that were forming like X's. And now naturally you can just walk around in the woods. You could find 2 saplings and things like that had fallen down and formed X's. But we would slow down just enough to be able to get a clear view of it. And we would keep on going. There was no more stopping and turning off the bikes and taking photos with our cameras and things like that. So we were just kind of cruising along, and I had to go back and take a look at my GoPro footage to be able to find some of these tree arches and some of these X's, I guess. That's all I could say is it just looked like X's made out of trees off in the woods.
Yep.
So I reviewed some of the GoPro footage, and I had it recording in 4K, so some of it's pretty clear and good. We had this whole feeling that we shouldn't be back there, and it wasn't until we saw the DEC officer the state ranger, the state parks police, that it wasn't really sinking in with us that, yeah, maybe we shouldn't be back here. As we're on our way out, another mile or so up from this large tree structure over top of the water with those tree logs, there was just a ripped up green shirt hanging from a tree branch over top of the logging trail. Now the odd thing about it is that it was way up there. The only way I could really foresee it getting up there is if I were to like throw it up into the tree from the ground. But it just naturally was placed hanging up over top of one of the branches, almost like my first thought was somebody probably took it off and a biker or somebody came through and saw I was on the trail. So they put it up. So on the way out, somebody would pick it back up, but it was just way out of reach. And as we looked at it, it was ripped up. It had just a rip mark going across the front portion of it from, say, like the top shoulder blade down towards like the abdomen region. So maybe it got ripped up or something like that, and the guy or girl just discarded it. But we thought that was just kind of odd. We didn't notice it on our way in because it was right over top of us. But at the same time, my justification was, well, on our way in, we were definitely moving a lot quicker than when we were exiting. So we probably could have just overlooked it. It was odd. We had only passed, other than the parks police, we had only passed one guy on a mountain bike, and he was up by Cedar River Flow. And there was one person pulled off on the side of the logging trail, maybe a half mile in from Cedar River Flow, that was out fishing in the river. It wasn't until, you know, we were completely out of there and we got back and started talking about things and started looking up on the internet that what we saw, we couldn't really explain it. And everything we kept coming across just relayed back to like a Sasquatch tree structure and things of that sort. And now, jokingly, I've never really discarded that these things are alive or they're not alive. I've never went out and, you know, stood out in the middle of the open and just told everybody, hey, you know, I believe in these things or I don't. It's just one of those, if they're real, it would definitely scare me if I ever came across one.
That's why they don't tell about them.
I would not be sticking around to try and talk with this thing or do what you do, going out there, out into their environment if that's what you're doing and trying to find these things.
Yep.
I
basically
definitely
provoking.
Know that feeling. Yes. That's pretty daring of you to do so, because if these things really are out there and they're watching us, or they were able to see us and I guess you could say communicate amongst each other that we were there, like, oh, hey, you know, what are these humans doing here? They're not supposed to be back here. I mean, I joke around about it thinking that that's probably the chatter that we heard.
Yeah, and it's awesome because the chatter that you heard, it's common. So many people, we've heard it. You know, I've heard it before. And it sounds like it's a conversation, and you're in the middle of woods, in the middle of nowhere, and you're like, you know, you're the only ones there for the most part. And I understand humans come in. Humans you find everywhere in the woods and stuff, but when you know you're by yourself, and then you hear this conversation going on, and you're just sitting there like, what the hell is this? Like, who's talking? And you always, like you say, you always wait for a person to come out, and it never does. And what's cool with your story is that the chatter started far away at first, but then got closer, and it was near that teepee structure. So it's almost like it was coming in. If you know, if there was two Sasquatches there, possibly, one of them may have came in to see what you were doing, like just to see, oh, who are you? And it's really cool because everything that you're talking about is what so many other witnesses, so many other people that have stories and, you know, teams like our team, we notice this stuff in the woods. And you just got a crash course in Sasquatching real quick because you saw basically everything right off the bat. And then to have DEC, which is really interesting to me because I would expect that you could drive an enduro bike back there if you're camping, because all those camps, you could only get into those campsites by, you know, basically trucks, because they're primitive campsites. So if you had an enduro bike that is registered, that you could ride on-road, off-road, and you are at a campsite, then it really doesn't make sense to me why they would be like, well, you can't be here. You know, it's not like you're being destructive or anything like that. So that kind of doesn't really make sense. And that doesn't make sense to me in a way, because if you didn't go past the gate and he's like, well, you can't be here, but if you had the bikes and you were camping, then technically you could be there because it's a registered vehicle.
Yeah.
So
well,
it's not,
we,
it's not
we
like
probably, we probably would have argued that fact with him if both of us didn't have that feeling of whatever is here doesn't want us here, so we're not sticking around.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. It's just interesting. It's just really interesting. And like you say, like, and for him to stare at the tree structures and things like that, as you said, like, you know, it's like DC, they know that these things are here, just like the mountain lion conversation that we bring up. They know that they exist. And in that one area, you had a lot of stuff, you know what I mean, especially with trees, the chatter. That's a lot to happen in such a short period of time. There's so many people that try to research Sasquatch and go out in the woods, and they never find a damn thing. And here you guys are just chilling, having a good time, and then it's boom, you guys are witnessing all these things, and you're like putting logically, like, this is just not right, you know? In a lot of our areas,
we had
too.
No
which
idea.
Awesome. No, it's crazy. In a lot of the in a lot of our areas that we go to, we find clothes in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's crazy because, like, we'll be way down in the woods or in the bush and going bushwhacking, and all of a sudden you'll come across like a shirt or like a towel or just something, or blankets, stuff that almost looks like either an animal would like drag off. you know, because animals do when they, you know, crash your camps and stuff like that, may drag some of this stuff off. But these things that we find from there that are people-oriented things are so far into the woods that there's no animal dragging a shirt or a towel or a blanket, you know, 2, 3, 4 miles in the middle of the woods, just straight through the woods. You know, it just doesn't belong there. So to have you, you know, see, you know, have a towel up in the tree that's above a guy who's 6 foot tall and is still above him, and then a possible ripped up shirt in a tree that, you know, the ripped up shirt is interesting. I mean, you could say maybe someone threw it up there, blah, blah, blah. But the, you know, especially with the towel part of it, it's in the same exact location as you're finding a tree structure, as you're having chatter, then you're finding logs crossing a river, which is even cool. That, I mean, that's super cool because obviously if the root's upside down, whatever it was, picked it up, carried it, and slammed it down upside down, which that's amazing. That's amazing.
With that, I mean, the only thing, and I believe I sent you the photos of this. The only way I could describe it was for people to do that, you would have to have a crane or some sort of machinery that could lift it up well over 40, 50 foot high and then drop it down in between these trees and wedge it in there. And that just, that wasn't possible. The area, the location, just to get back there was no way any type of human machinery could get back there without constructing some sort of a road or firmament for it to get onto. And that's really sort of what made our stomachs turn, like, wow.
Yeah.
Whatever all of this is, it's not natural.
No, and you're just like seeing the sheer power of these possible creatures. I always have to say possible because we don't have a body yet. But just the idea of like how strong they are. And that's, you hear them how they can catch deer and they snap their necks like in half, and they're carrying. You know, there's been sightings where Bigfoot have a deer over their shoulder just walking through the woods. You know, so this the way that they're just so strong and agile and can just do these kind of things. And for whatever reason they make these things, you know, we still don't have a full understanding why. Teepee structures. There's so many different theories, but we just don't really understand what they're for. A lot of it we say is territory and markers and things like that, which just makes kind of sense. But for you to hear the chatter near the teepee is amazing. That's a great experience in itself. I mean, that's the Oprah aha experience. That's what I always like to say. Because, like, you know, and they're always so far away from you, but close, and you can't even see them. You know, like you could hear the chatter, but you can't see them.
Yes. It's close enough to where you could probably throw a baseball. That's like the sound distance that it was from us.
Yeah.
In the feeling, I don't know how really to describe it, but looking at that tree structure, when we first saw it, the look that kind of overcame me, and I didn't really talk too much about my brother with this because I don't know if I'd want to admit if I were scared or if he were scared, and we just didn't want to go through that, but the feeling I had in my stomach was that whatever that is telling me it doesn't want me here. That's like warning me, don't go near it or don't go past that point. And that's that gut feeling I had.
Yeah, and that's the way to always go. I tell everybody, always go by your gut. When you start feeling some crazy stuff happen in your gut, that just happened to us last week. I started getting a gut feeling like we were dealing with something. Sure enough, we got a rock knock, and we heard something walking. It's just that gut feeling. You just got to go by it. I mean, yeah, that's, you know, survival instincts. We all have them. So, you have an awesome story. So, you know, we're almost out of time here. See? Oop. And yeah, we're almost out of time. Like, I see this so fast. I have so many questions. So we'll have to have you back on. We'll have to ask some more questions.
Sure.
Awesome.
I appreciate giving me the time to share this. Like I said, when I reached out to you,
awesome.
I said, I don't know if this is crazy or not, but I've always just kind of laughed at the fact that, hey, they're out there. I'll go, you know, look for one and things like that. But I don't think if I ever saw one, I'd ever stick around to do much other than just say that I saw something.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Robert, for sharing your story, and we'll definitely have you back and we can talk a lot more about in depth about a lot of this stuff. I mean, your story is amazing. So thank you so much for sharing it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime, man. And you have a good night.
Thanks. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Footer Nation, that was an awesome story. I mean, once again, another witness coming forward and basically seeing some strange stuff, and logically, it's not a Bigfoot person, puts some things together, does a little research, and boom, now we have a possible Squatch area. DC, once again, is in the area, and then they kind of bounce out real quick and say, you can't be here, even though bikes are registered, and technically they could be there. There's a lot of questions to the story, and we're going to have to look into the story a little more because it's so awesome. But we're already at the end of the show. I mean, this is how fast this goes. All right, but as always, friends, keep it squatchy, and we'll see you out in the trail. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the NYBS Radio Show. Tune in next time as we continue our search for Bigfoot right here in the great state of New York. Until next time, friends, keep it squatchy, and we'll see you out on the trail.